Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
You could easily define me as a one-hit wonder, but that term has a negative connotation. But why on earth would it have a connotation? Because I would be told that I'm a one-hit wonder by people who have had no hits.
Hello you, this is Christopher Triumph again. I'm happy to perhaps give you a little bit of a new side of James Blunt today. But first, I have to talk about fall. And this is a true story. Before I got my Stutterheim raincoat, I hated this time of year. It's dark, it's depressing, and it's cold. But then I got this fabulous raincoat, and it actually made me wish for rain and 5 degrees Celsius, which is about 40 Fahrenheit. So I could go out and about and enjoy my coat and look great while doing it. So, for all you autumn haters out there, I recommend that you check out www.stutterheim.com and find your favorite color and style. And shipping is free wherever you are. So, thanks, Stutterheim, for enhancing a whole season for me and for the rest of the world. It's been a couple of weeks since I met up with James Blunt here in Stockholm, and he's married since. Congratulations, James! And I must say that he's a really fascinating guy. He is witty as a whip, he's really funny and sharp, and obviously an extremely talented singer-songwriter. I mean, in the last decade, he's written some of the biggest hits. James was born 40 years ago, even though he'll in just a while try to convince me that that's not the case, and I almost bought it. And then he grew up in England, he worked in the army for 6 years, and then he left in 2002 to work with music. And 3 years later, You're Beautiful was released, and well, James has been busy since then. No, I don't know if you keep up with Twitter, but he's gained new popularity over the last year or so since he started tweeting these really witty, ironic replies to haters all over the world. Google James Blunt Twitter and you'll find them all. It's a treasure. Now, when I met James, he was doing one of those days when he met all Swedish long-term press at the same time, sort of. So I didn't get too much time with him, but I really enjoyed what I got. So without further ado, let's roll the tape. I was wondering, because I just turned 40. You recently turned 40 as well?
No, I turned 30. So I'm a decade younger than you, but you're looking mighty fine for it.
Okay, thank you. Did you have a crisis? I think you're 8 days older than I am.
8 days and ten years.
Yeah,
you know, it's a strange thing. I think we put so much emphasis on age in a generation where, you know, people can live for so many years, and yet we focus on age so intensely. I don't think I'm too stressed about the numbers that might be associated with my name.
I didn't have a crisis, but I summed up my life until that point and sort of tried to appreciate where I was at, if you know what I mean.
Sure.
Have you done that as well?
Yeah, I think I probably have, but I don't think necessarily just by it from turning 30. I think throughout our lives, I suppose, you have moments, don't you, where you try and work out what you've achieved in that time. And I suppose what is really funny in the modern world is that often we're kind of told to value those things by maybe the amount of money we have or the number of possessions we have. Success in my industry is kind of measured in the, you know, how much fortune you've made and what level of fame you're at. And we talk about that as kind of a measure of success. And I think maybe it's pretty shallow and hollow way of assessing, you know, what kind of car you've got. It's not necessarily a great way of assessing what your life has been like. And maybe we should value life instead by your happiness, the smile on your face, and the number of friends you have.
On Facebook.
Or in reality.
Yeah.
Yes.
Are you saying that fame and fortune hasn't made you happy?
I think it's just not a great way of measuring success. And instead, I think when my dad even said, when I was leaving the army, you know, James, you understand that it's quite a gamble to leave the security of the army. I mean, it's madness, the security of the army. This is a job that sends you to war. To join an industry of music, which is very hard to be commercially successful in. And I said, Dad, you know, that the commercial success is not what I'm after. I have this dream to do music, to make an album or two, if I may. And I need to do that before I die, because otherwise I will be unhappy. So, you know, I want to do it for as many years as I can. And if it makes me happy, that's the measure of success that I'm after.
So you do actually appreciate your life then?
Yeah. I mean, I've been incredibly lucky. I thought I would be doing a tour of North London. Instead, I'm doing a tour of the world. These things are totally unexpected to me. But the number of units that I might have sold, you know, when a record label tells me it's however many 20 million albums, they could be making that number up. They really could.
Yeah.
They probably are. It's knowing them, it's probably much more, and they're trying not to pay me for them. You know, the numbers are irrelevant. It's the reality which is much more important. And for me to be able to turn up to anywhere and a public, you know, turn up as an audience and come and sing songs with me, is what I take away from it, is what I enjoy about it.
Yeah. Do you have any ideas how many gigs you've done?
No, I suppose I probably do, let's say, on average, probably 200 a year. And I've been doing that probably then for 10 years, so probably 2,000.
That's an awful lot.
It means I've had put in the practice, definitely.
Yeah. Yeah, the 10,000 hours that you have to put into something to achieve greatness at it. You've done that a long time ago then. No, that's 2,000 gigs and you play for 2 hours in general?
Yeah.
Okay, so you still have 6,000 hours
still
left.
Still pretty shy.
Yeah.
I've been doing some rehearsal in between that. I'll see if I can eke my hours up.
Yeah, of course. You told me that the record company, I mean, it's just a number for you, the huge success that you've had. Would you say that you are in the best place in your life right now?
Yeah, but I think if you'd asked me that, you know, 6 months ago, I would have said yes as well. And if you'd asked me 3 years ago, yes as well, because I don't think I don't think anything's gone particularly badly wrong for me, and I think I've been very lucky. You know, music is my hobby and my passion, and I've chased that and that dream, and along the way, for me, I've been very lucky to get where I am. You know, you need to have songs, and you need to have a team around you, a great management who will help you through the music industry. You need to create a bit of luck, but that luck still needs to fall into place. And I know many fantastic musicians along the way who haven't had the same opportunities that perhaps I've had. And so, yeah, so I've definitely had a little bit of luck that's kept me where I am, and I appreciate that.
If you would end up on a deserted island where there are plenty of guitars and stuff, there's no audience, and you know for sure that you will never get out of there, would you still write and play music, do you think?
Definitely, and probably more so there than anywhere else.
When Twitter is not...
Exactly, when I don't have the distractions of a social media that my record label want me to pursue. Yeah, then I would focus on something probably more meaningful, rather than thinking about perception of an audience through social media. I'd focus on something that's much more important, the artistry of music.
You seem to work an awful lot. Is writing music a constant process for you?
No, I don't write constantly. I'm pretty bad at doing that when I'm on the road. And I know other people who are very good at it. I work a lot with Ryan Tedder, the lead singer of One Republic, and I've written with him on the road. I've had to jump on his tour bus and travel with him. That's how we wrote Bonfire Heart. I'm from this album, Moon Landing. As I jumped on the One Republic tour bus, I was a groupie. I didn't have to sleep with any of the band, but we toured around Europe and we wrote Bonfire Heart on the road. And he's a guy who's very good at when the bus stops in the morning and when the crew are setting up his stage, he will get out his guitar and write songs. Whereas for me, I find I'm recovering from my hangover. and so, instead for me, when the tour is over, I go home, I wash my clothes, and then I head to a studio and I try and concentrate on writing there.
Do you suffer from post-production blues when you've been on tour for such a long time?
No, I don't think I do. It's definitely a way of life. I sleep on a tour bus with 12 hairy, smelly men, and we travel the world like that. It is a little bubble, which we love, and we all get on incredibly well and have the most amazing time. But to get off the bus and go home and live a normal life is a great release.
But has it always been like that?
Yeah. For the last 10 years, I've worked in a cycle. And that's why generally you won't hear from me perhaps in one country for 3 years, because I put an album out and promote it as I did last August. That's when I left home. And I'm in a new city every single day then for the next 6 months promoting that album. And then I get on my tour bus and we travel the world for 18 months. And so I'll turn up in a city, you know, once or twice on that 18-month world tour. And then from there, I'll go to a studio, perhaps in Los Angeles, for a year to write and record an album. And then that's basically 3 years in total. Then I'll chuck out that new album and start the promotion again and get on the road.
What about your plants?
Well, I don't think I have any, really. No. I think, from here, I'm going to go and play some shows in the UK. Those are my next plans. And from there, we'll hit our mainland continental Europe. And the wheels on the bus just carry on.
I think you misunderstood. My English is a little rusty. What about your plants?
Oh, my plants.
Plants.
In the garden?
Yeah.
Oh, well, yes.
Who takes care of those?
I ask someone to go and drop in on home and they go and water the plants for me.
Okay.
Yeah.
But you do...
And they do a much better job than I do.
But you do have home for you is...
I live in Ibiza.
Ibiza. Is that how it's pronounced, even in English?
Ibiza, I would think, is how you'd say it.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah.
What is it about Ibiza and British people?
Well, I like nightclubs.
All right. So you're a fan of that scene?
Yeah, definitely. I've always been a night owl, really. And so, yeah, I like the way the clubs there start at 2 in the morning and finish at, 7 or 8 in the morning.
But you seem like a healthy guy.
Right. I'm wearing lots of makeup.
Ah, okay.
For a radio interview.
Yeah, but there's going to be photos.
Oh.
Yeah.
Great. Well, at least I put enough on.
I mean, nightclubs for you, it's not about the ecstasy and the rave thing. More...
It's just a place I really enjoy socializing, and I just like the scene, yeah. Ibiza's just got some of the biggest and most incredible clubs on the planet.
But do you have more than one home?
No, Ibiza's is my home.
Okay, cool. How long have you been living there?
About 8 years now.
Okay, fantastic. I've never been. I'm a teetotal, that's the expression, right?
Yes, it is.
But I can still enjoy the island.
Yeah, very much. You know, with the... don't know if you enjoy clubs. As a teetotaler, I think personally, if you find the right DJ, then you can.
Yeah.
And the right music, then you definitely can. You probably don't need any because the places are so mad anyway that it's just the scene and the spectacle that is worth seeing. But the Mediterranean as a whole, it's an island in the sunshine with great beaches, great people, and great food.
So you were down with the Swedish House Mafia long before they became the huge success they later on was.
Yeah, and I know all those boys, they're great fun.
Yeah, fantastic. Are you team Axwell and Ingrosso, or are you team Steve Angelo?
Steve is the one I know.
Okay.
Best of the three. In fact, he's just bought my producer's house in Los Angeles. My producer, Tom Rothrock, who I recorded Back to Bedlam and went back to go and record my new album, Moon Landing. And then after we recorded Moon Landing, he said, okay, I've had enough. Sold his house in Los Angeles to Steve Angelo.
Fantastic. I realized the other day that there's something called lead singer syndrome. Have you heard of that?
I haven't. What is it?
Okay, it's a Swedish artist told me this, that when you are on tour and when you're the lead singer, everybody, I mean, you're going to get a whole lot of attention, whatever you do. And then when you go home to your family, perhaps, you expect the same kind of attention for, like, taking out the garbage or doing just regular stuff. Can you relate to this?
Yes, I can. You know, I have a tour manager who is like a sergeant major from the army, but at the same time, he's like a father and a mother all in one. He takes on so many roles to make sure that a band and a crew travel the world, a huge, great logistical process of 5 trucks and 2 tour buses. And at the same time, his job is to look after me. And along the way, it means I forget how to check into an aeroplane. And yeah, definitely think that to get my washing done on the road means just handing over a bag of washing rather than putting it in a washing machine myself and putting in the powder. And so, yeah, so when that tour finishes, there's definitely a little moment when you suddenly have to do things for yourself and struggle not to phone the tour manager to ask how to do those things.
But you seem sort of sorrowless about that. It's not a real, I mean, you don't get depressed over stuff like that when tour ends. I'm really digging in here into
yeah,
the darkness.
I know, I think I enjoy it. I think I enjoy the fact that, you know, I'm a really practical person. I don't, you know, when I turn up anywhere and I'm being met to do a concert or a show, you know, as I arrived in Poland yesterday and I arrived on my own, there was a massive great meeting party for me and cameras and the works. And they said, like, you know, where is your entourage and where is your personal assistant and where is everyone else? And I was there on my own, you know, carrying my bag because that's what a normal human being does. I got on a plane and I got off the plane. And so I find it quite amusing on a tour when my tour manager is around, you know, when you do start becoming a tiny bit reliant on that person and forgetting how to look after yourself. I find it quite amusing how, as an adult, you kind of fall into that kind of, become a child, I suppose, and be carried in that way. But I think it's only healthy to go home and start sorting yourself out again.
Do you ever get to be anonymous?
Anonymity is a really special thing, and I find it a crazy world how our children from television shows are taught, you know, that a job to aspire to now is fame. Because I could say one thing categorically on record: fame is a terrible thing, and fame is the last thing you should aspire to be. You should just, you know, I think, you know, we should teach our children to aspire to be a doctor. Who saves lives, a nurse who saves lives, a teacher who educates, an aid worker who rebuilds countries. Or if you're more shallow and you think, you know, that it's not emotional success, but in financial success, then go into the city and earn millions of pounds, but be anonymous while you do it. Because that anonymity is a very special thing, to be able to walk down a street and not be pointed at or stopped. Is a really special thing, just to be able to walk the world as you are and stop and stare at things without people stopping and staring at you is a very special thing. And so, yeah, there are moments when I do in darkened rooms, but on the streets it's perhaps a little harder. I tell you where anonymity I find I get more anonymity is on public transport.
Okay, yeah.
Particularly in places like London, no one looks at each other. In somewhere like London, and I haven't walked around in Stockholm enough to know, but in somewhere like London, people don't look at each other, and that's a great moment of anonymity there.
So you do actually run by the subway?
Totally.
Yeah, okay.
And if anyone spots me, they think I'm just there for inspiration.
Or that you look like James Blunt.
That guy who sings that song on the underground. How funny. I saw someone who looks just like him there.
Yeah.
Only smaller.
Yeah, you aren't super tall.
Exactly.
How is that? How's that
working for me?
Yeah, exactly.
It works very well.
Yeah.
I was a reconnaissance officer in the army, and reconnaissance means creeping around in bushes. So to be a couple of inches shorter than the people who work with me was a benefit. It means I can hide in a smaller space. I'm outside your house and you don't know it.
No, that's good for you. But you don't do that so much these days?
Not in an official capacity, no.
No.
just more in a more kind of arrestable way outside people's windows.
You told me that you don't actually write music on the road, but your writing process, how does it work?
Writing a song, I think there's no rules to it. And so often It's funny as a writer how people will think it's, you know, an incredible thing, a kind of magical idea to write a song. But the truth is, you know, anyone can write a song if you can hum a tune and twist it and change it to create an emotion that is your own, a melody that is your own, and put some words to it that are your own words, then you can be a songwriter in a moment. And so, you know, what is this? What do I do? Well, I think I live life. And to live life is to then feel life. To feel life is to have, you know, an experience that makes you feel strongly enough, hopefully, to then want to capture it in a song. And to do that, then, yeah, I suppose it's just, it's relatively simple. You know, that there are words that you want to describe in a moment, and those words you then would say or you would sing in a particular way. If you want to say to some girl that, you know, that how beautiful they are, you would say, you know, my God, you're beautiful. And then the more you say it out loud and try and sing it, it'll fall into its own little melody, and eventually you'll be singing it in exactly the way I was, for me, singing, you know, the tune of my most famous song.
Yeah. Since I've been, like, listening a whole lot on your music in the last few days, I mean, that's something that strikes me, that it always really feels natural. That it's not, I mean, you don't, like, you don't complicate it.
Very much. And I suppose what I'm trying to capture is real, genuine emotion. So rather than contrive a melody and fit words to a contrived melody, the most effective, definitely, is to have words and say them out loud, but to sing them in a way that comes naturally. And, you know, and because they will, because of the way you speak, however you speak, whichever nationality or whichever kind of person you are, those words will then flow in a particular way. And that flow and that pattern will form its own melody, and that melody then will be connected to those words, and it will, and that's, you know, that's a song that comes from the heart.
But speaking of You Are Beautiful, I mean, would you say that the part of the success is that you, I mean, it feels like you really, really mean it?
Yeah. I think its simplicity is that it's a real life story about passing my then ex-girlfriend on the underground, the subway in London, with her new boyfriend. I didn't know he existed, and so I had a moment, and we lived that moment together when we saw each other and caught each other's eyes and passed each other, but we didn't do anything. And in that moment, you know, I went away and I wrote those words in 2.5 minutes of just, yeah, you know, my life is brilliant, my love is pure, I saw an angel, of that I'm sure. And the moment I even speak it, it sounds pretty close to how the song sounds when I'm singing it. And so it's just a really genuine, honest moment. And I suppose what other people connect with it, not only is it genuine, but other people can relate to it too.
You're not even remotely tired of that song?
Well, strangely, what I find interesting is that in interviews I'm asked, are you tired of singing that song? And so I would say I'm frustrated that I'm asked the question.
Oh, okay, sorry about that.
Not at all. And this is my reason, which is because one assumes that, God, you must be tired of that song. Well, of the 2,000 concerts that I did, or however many we've talked about, it's not the only song I played.
Of course.
You know, I've been asked to play 20 songs every single night, of which that is one. That's a song that is the cornerstone of my career. Without it, I would just be on a tour of North London, not of the world, as I'm doing. So I'm very grateful to have that song, and the reaction to it is always very special. And if I didn't play that song, the audience would probably ask for their money back. And like a chef whose signature dish is, you know, a fantastic meatball, then for me it's a pleasure to be able to make that meatball and give it to someone who enjoys eating it.
I'm curious, do you, I mean, if you get that question a lot, would you say that, I mean, is it a European thing to ask that, or is it like a world phenomenon to ask?
It's a world phenomenon, absolutely. I think it's also it's the way that we work in quite negative ways, often, human beings. We measure success, again, in quite strange ways, and we deride it quite easily. So for me, you could easily define me as a one-hit wonder. Now, that
wouldn't be true, though.
That's very kind of you to say so. But that term has a negative connotation. But why on earth would it have a connotation? Because I would be told that I'm a one-hit wonder by people who have had no hits. So mine is 100% more success rate than that person who might be giving this negative. You know, one will do.
Yeah.
One hit, as it has set me on the road for four world tours. It's, you know, most musicians are searching for that one hit. And yet, with that one, what we can define is in a negative way.
I'm wondering if it says something about... I mean, Swedes, we are really, I'm not sure how to translate this, but we sort of take pride in not being too proud over stuff. Whereas I would say that Americans would, I mean, if this is your one shot to get what you want, then you're going to do it, sort of.
Yeah. So, well, I think there's, I definitely know what you're talking about. The Americans champion success. And they celebrate success. And I think that's a pretty special thing. I think they do it well. In Britain, we do exactly the opposite, and we're negative about success, and we mock success, and we sort of, you know, tell people to be embarrassed about it, which I think is silly. I hope here in Sweden what you do is perhaps you're modest about your own successes. It would be a great position to be in. To be modest about your own successes is a fine quality, but hopefully not mock or deride other people's success.
I think we do that as well.
Okay. Well, then the Brits and the Swedes are similar.
Yeah, I think we are. Speaking of then financial success, even though it's not the same thing as happiness, but I mean, you don't have to work. You would never have to work again.
I have a very expensive girlfriend. So I have to.
Okay. But... what do you spend money on? Because, I mean, you're constantly on the road. I guess that you don't pay for the hotel yourself, or maybe you do in the long run, but...
Yeah, I do. No, you know, the bills I pay, you know, I have a band and crew and five trucks, two tour buses. It's all an expensive process. But, of course, it's a great earner, absolutely. I go home and I spend on having fun with my friends.
And go to nightclubs.
Yeah.
And you pick up the bill afterwards. You don't say bill in England, right?
I don't think so.
You say the check.
Oh, you mean, yes, of course. Oh, I understand what you're saying.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think, you know, what is it, the shallower side of my business? What has it brought to me? Yeah, it means I can get into the nightclubs for free now, which is great. I don't have to queue. That's all I ever wanted from fame. That's the only positive thing about fame for me, is not having a queue for nightclubs. But yeah, I think... It's put me in a position where I can have some fun in life. But what I know is that fun is only ever proper fun if you're sharing it with people.
But what about the attention? I mean, you say that cutting lines is the only positive thing about your success or fame.
Yeah, I would say so.
You don't like the attention then?
No, I don't think so. I mean, as I am a
person.
Do
you seem sort of... I mean, you don't seem offensed that I'm here.
No, but I'm using you.
Okay.
I'm using you to tell people about my concerts that are coming up in Sweden in October.
Yeah.
I'm using you to tell them that I've got an album out called Moon Landing. But in the process of doing that, I can, you know, I'm meeting a human being along the way. And as I said before, an interview then is about that conversation along the way and whether it's easy or hard. And this one I find easy because I think it's more a conversation rather than anything loaded.
I take that as a compliment. Do you know Russell Brand?
Yes, I do.
You guys remind me of each other.
Really?
For some strange reason.
Right. I would take that as a compliment. I'm not sure if he would.
Well, it is a compliment, I guess. You're both really funny.
Yeah, and I've met him a few times. He's definitely a card.
What does that mean?
He means he's funny.
Yeah. He was here not that long ago with his Messiah Complex tour. Did you see that one?
I haven't. I can pick up a little bit about it from some of the press stuff that I've seen.
I highly recommend
right,
it.
Right, I'll do that.
Are you a political person?
Well, I think I would probably say no, because I'm someone who's come from the army, and I think what I learned from the army is that politics is confused with the pursuit of power. And, you know, all politicians are thinking short-term, really. Short-term about how to get themselves re-elected by the nature of, you know, sustaining a career instead of what is for the greater good. And as a soldier, for instance, you know, I was sent into a war in Kosovo where I think the politicians were confused about why they were there. They were there in order to make themselves more global statesmen, whereas we on the ground were much more practical about just trying to save people's lives. We weren't interested in ourselves. We were interested in looking out for other people in someone else's country to make sure that they're safe and secure and stable so that we can come home alive with our soldiers. And so, yeah, and there were different political arguments along the way that were madness. There's a very famous fight or argument between the Russians and us, the kind of American-British allies, over the airport, and yet we were supposed to be on the same side, and where there was a Mexican standoff with guns, where we're having some political argument. The politician said, we must have control of that, where the Russians say no, instead they wanted it, and yet we're supposed to be on the same side, and these kind of conflictions of political interests completely override practical common sense on the ground.
Do you vote?
I haven't voted for a long time in the UK because I don't live there, and I'm not eligible to vote anywhere else at this stage.
No, but you could do it by mail, right?
I think not, because I don't live in the country.
Okay, all right.
I don't spend enough time in any one country to qualify as a voter.
But you still are a British citizen.
But not a resident, simply because my tours take me around the world. As I say, for the last 10 years, I've been on a tour bus, and yeah.
But do you keep up with, current affairs?
Yeah, very much. I think, whereas most of my band read books, I read the newspapers every day. And, I've recently done a concert with the Clintons and seen the work that they do, and I'm bowled over by those people who, as a family, I think are really incredibly selfless people who really are working for the benefit not only of their own country, but many other countries and many other peoples around the world. And in the process of doing that, I've met the likes of Tony Blair, and I've met the likes of Nick Clegg, and been at least introduced to the people like David Cameron of that ilk, that political field, all three different parties. And it's easy when you read newspapers to take your side and feel that those people are aren't achieving anything, don't make any sense. But I am blown away by meeting the individuals, because I think when you meet the individuals, I think the politics and the mechanics of politics is really troubled. I think democracy itself is really troubled, the process of democracy. But what I do think from meeting the individuals, that they are just trying to do the best for other people. They're spending their lives kind of getting abuse whilst trying to do the best for other people in a political process which is very, very we're very slow and sluggish.
Talking about politics and current affairs, do you have main issues that you follow?
Yeah, absolutely. I think the most important issue of our generation, of our lifetime, is climate change, without shadow of a doubt. And we can talk about the economy and growth and expansion of the humankind as much as you like, but I see us as the biggest virus on the planet who destroys our planet without thought or consideration for anyone else. All we think about is, homes for us, and we must build, and our economies must grow and grow. And if you look around the planet, we are damaging it to a massive extent, to our own detriment in the long run.
But still you tour with like 5 trailers.
Yeah, absolutely. I think, you have to find a balance of achieving certain things and at the same time trying to progress into how we can benefit that. For every ticket we sell, we plant a tree online.
Oh, you do?
In North America.
Fantastic.
The process that we go through on different levels, on business-wise, as well as on a personal level, to try and, take myself away from the regular consumption is ongoing. I live, say, in Spain. I run myself from solar power, from heat exchange systems. I run myself from a well rather than from the water. And on that level, I'm almost off the grid on that. Touring, I travel the world and take music to people. At the same time, we talk about the environment and discuss within forums what we can do. It needs someone to travel to do that in the first place. But yeah, as I say, I look at ways that I can. But like every human being, we've got a long way to go.
Do you believe in God?
I think, like everyone, I probably believe in God when the shit's going down. But for the rest of the day, I don't entirely know.
That's called something, right? It's not an atheist, you're a...
an opportunist.
Well, when you don't believe in God, which is for most part of your life, then what do you believe in?
I think all of us have an impact on each other. And I think all of us have an impact on the future. And therefore, the notion of, you know, Christian beliefs, I think, are very important. Whether you believe or don't believe, I think there's the actual Christian beliefs themselves that I have known about, and I only use those because they're the ones I was raised with and don't know any others, about looking out for other people because you have an impact, and what, you know, and what you do on this planet now will have an impact tomorrow. And I know that from going to war. If you murder someone, if you murder someone's father, the son will be thrown into a cycle of bloodshed that will continue for generations because they won't forgive and they certainly won't forget. And so, yeah, so I believe in a greater consciousness, a greater care for humankind and beyond that, the planet.
When are you a pacifist?
No, I'm not a pacifist because I think I understand the notion of having to force certain things. I believe in peace, and I believe the end aim is peace. Sadly, I believe that humans are not necessarily kind. I've met many individuals who are, but I think as groups, we become unkind. And, you know, you see that in the most basic level of a school. Schools, you get, you know, groups of people who become the bullies, and it's and individuals want to join those groups so that they're not isolated on their own. And that happens from the earliest age, and it continues. And that's why, and again, in the war that I've seen, you see groups of people abusing others that they can. And so when I went to Kosovo, I was a peace enforcer. I would go out to people and say, you need to stop murdering these people. And they would say, no, you know, we're not going to. We're going to carry on doing this. They would give some empty reason. They were talking about religion as their reason. The frontier between Muslim and an Orthodox Christian is a good enough reason to murder.
It often is, in their minds.
Absolutely. And when you are then dealing with people who won't be reasoned with, then there are times like that, then I think, yeah, then I believe that force has to be used very, very sadly.
Do you have hope in that matter?
No, I don't.
No.
I think I've met enough individuals who show enough aggression early on to think that, no, the human race is pretty fallible.
How do you cope with boredom?
Well, I'm pretty busy. So, yeah, I'm not that bored that often.
When on the airplanes or...
Airplanes, I love them. It means I can catch up with everything I haven't been able to keep up with on the road.
Okay, so you are never bored?
I wouldn't say I was never bored, but I'm...
You have experienced it.
But I've, yeah, of course. But I'm pretty good at keeping myself busy.
I think we might have discussed this a little bit earlier, but by mistake. But do you have goals?
I think my biggest ambition in life was always to do music, to record albums, and you know, and perhaps do some live shows. And I'm doing that now. Although I could say my ambition has been achieved, and perhaps more than I'd ever hoped, I don't feel it's like stopped. I still really enjoy music, and I really still love touring, and I still really love writing music and beyond. So I hope to carry that on. I think, you know, a wider ambition, one without definition, is to, you know, is to fill life as much as I possibly can, with as many things as I possibly can. I travel the world at the moment, but I don't always see it. And in between tours, this next tour, I intend to go and travel the world again, not doing music, but to go and actually visit a place like Stockholm and see it for real, rather than you know, briefly out of a window here.
Well, I hope you get to do that and that you get to be in peace and anonymous.
Yeah, thank you.
Can you tell me about your ring? It's really cool.
Thank you. Yeah, my ring is, I suppose, it's a kind of archaic British tradition with some families, and it's given to you when you're 21 years old. You put it on your left hand, on your little finger, and on it, it's gold, and it has your family crest on it.
Okay.
And so my crest on this ring is a sun with eyes, and in the middle, a glove, a metal glove, like a knight's metal glove. We call it a gauntlet. And underneath the sun, a scroll. And in the olden days, before envelopes that sealed, which you could lick them when you sent out a letter, you'd seal your envelope with wax, and you'd stamp the wax with your ring, and on it would have then your family crest so that the receiver could see that it was generally from whoever it was. And so you can identify my family through different records and books from the picture, the emblem, the crest.
Ah,
on
cool.
My ring.
You didn't get that from, like, being a knight back in the days. Well, you didn't.
I didn't, but yeah, I suppose, you know, that my... Yeah, it's kind of got that idea. It's an old-school family ring, and it's...
The Blount family.
Yeah.
Are you a feminist?
I'm a believer in equality. Over anything, equality of, you know, I'm a believer in equality of and respect for both men and women in the same way that I'm, but also I cherish the differences in the same way that I'm a great believer and I'm a great believer in, you know, difference in nationalities. And I love championing each with respect, but also championing the differences, you know, and women are very different from men. And thank God for that. And it's a wonderful partnership in that way. And I love the difference between Sweden and Britain, because without those differences, life would be boring. And I think it's worth championing our differences as long as you respect the others and champion theirs too.
So are you a feminist?
So, yeah, I think I find the title difficult to say. I think, yeah, I champion women's rights, but to be treated as equals, to be respected equally.
Would you like to recommend something?
I'm a musician, so I will. So I'll defer to my job as musician. And I would say that we've talked a lot about fame, fortune. We talk about, you know, in the music business, success. And success is measured in units sold and chart places. And so I would like to recommend people who haven't hit chart places, who haven't sold millions, who haven't made millions of pounds, who aren't famous necessarily in the global sphere, but who are much better musicians than me. And their songs are absolutely incredible. The first is a woman who I saw live at South by Southwest, a festival in Austin, Texas, where I got signed originally, my first record deal to Custard Records. But the person I saw just before I played was this incredible artist called Cat Power.
Yeah.
Who is, for me, a really great, free, liberated songwriter. And the next person I'd recommend is the reason I ended up recording in Los Angeles with a producer called Tom Rothrock is because Tom Rothrock had produced an artist called Elliot Smith, who's dead now, but his songs are absolutely beautiful. And for me, I heard them and they changed my life.
And who would you like me to interview on Vervet?
I think you should probably go out and set out to interview Vladimir Putin. I think that would be an important interview to ask what the hell is going on.
Thank you very much for your time, James Blunt.
Great fun indeed. Nice to talk to you.
That's Mr. James Blunt, or as we call him here at the Varvet headquarters, Mr. Salt of the Earth. Really nice guy, humble, funny, fantastic. And I really recommend you following him on Twitter. That's James Blunt in one word. And while on Twitter, why don't you follow Varvet Pod as well? That's Varvet Pod in one word, both on Twitter and Instagram. Really, really convenient. Varvet International is sponsored by Stutterheim.com. I'm your host. My name is Christopher Triumph. Our producer's name is Christina Jörling-Biro. Our editor's name is Lovisa Olsson. And the theme song is produced by myself and Maria Marcus. Join us next week for another interview. I can't remember who that is, but I'll let you know very soon on the Varvet International Facebook page. Talk to you in a week. Bye-bye.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.